for FFA Today. I'm Hannah Borg. I have the pleasure to be joined by Ted McKinney, Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agriculture Affairs from the United States Department of Agriculture. Can you start me off by telling me what does that long title mean and what is your role on a day-to-day basis at USDA?
Sure. Well, I'm lucky that I'm the first in this role. USDA has always had the Foreign Agricultural Service and a orientation toward markets and places outside the U.S. So that's always been there. But because of the 2014 Farm Bill, which allowed Secretary Perdue to make the change, he decided it's time to have a standalone person, an undersecretary whose focus is always trade and foreign ag affairs. So my world is outside the borders of the U.S., although clearly I'm here and we do stuff domestically. So I'm about 400,000 miles into my quest for 1,000,000 miles. That was the secretary's goal for me. And my role is to enhance trade wherever we can. So things like the Japan Free Trade Agreement, the USMCA or NAFTA 2.0, China. There's a lot of discussion about China. You know, I get to participate in nearly all of that discussion, negotiations. And our team at USDA and the Foreign Ag Service are just, they're just such great depth and breadth that we always do the policy work, the thinking on the numbers, the figures, what's the policy we want. And then clearly we'd always partner with our friends at the U.S. Trade Rep's office. But we have a lot more people to do that kind of work than they. So it's a great partnership. So my world is outside the borders of the U.S. to sell stuff. How's that?
I can appreciate that as a Nebraska farmer. Can you tell me more about what are those trade talks like? Like, what are you walking into the room talking with people from other countries? Talk more about the actual, what those actual talks are going like.
Sure. Well, if you've never been in one, you could think or project that it might be intimidating, and it can be. But let me just say, we know, usually know well, the people with whom we're negotiating and talking. And they're good people. Every country puts its very best people involved in trade and negotiations. And they also are good diplomats. They're respectful, just as I think we are to them. So in that sense, you come into an easier atmosphere, a more cordial atmosphere than many people might think. But that said, you got to have your A game. You got to have your game mask on because it's tough. It's tough. If people wonder whether trade is truly fair and reciprocal around the world, I'm here to say it is categorically not. And we have tried to be that great beacon on the hill that follows science. Thank you very much. And if somebody proves that their products are safe and equivalent in safety to those in the U.S., in it can come. Well, I would say we're having to rethink that because we're not getting same fair treatment. And I think that's what the president has been all about. He doesn't want any sort of an advantage. He just wants to make sure it's a fair and level playing field. And I'm all in for that. So in that sense, you have to know your stuff. You have to know what you want. Some countries deny fruit access, our high-quality fruit going into their country. Sometimes it's fruit. Usually it's commodities like corn, soy, the proteins, livestock and poultry is always in the mix, timber. Anything we make in the U.S. has been involved in many of these discussions. And so you have to think and prepare and prepare and prepare so that you know what you want. And you also have to know what their system is like. You have to go and know your competition. You have to understand their game plan as best you can so that you can find win-win. And when you find win-win, it's a pretty happy day, and you can do that. But the world has never, ever been fair. You know, in the case of China, it's a communist country, and they have a certain way of looking at things, just as they think we have a certain way of looking at things. And it's sorting through that that becomes long and difficult and arduous. I would say language translation is also an issue. You have to take twice as long because you're going through an interpreter. But you know what? Back to FFA, I'll say that the skills that people learn in FFA, the level of respect, how you command yourself, your ability to speak, your ability to put thoughts into words, it all comes screaming back home. So I'm so grateful for my FFA background because it's used, every single day and certainly on every negotiation.
You led right into my next question. I know you're an FFA alumni member. Yeah. Can you tell me more about your FFA experience when you were in high school?
Sure. Well, I'm from the Tipton FFA chapter, just about an hour north of Indianapolis here. And I was so lucky to have a mom and dad that believed in letting my brothers and sister and I do our thing. Now, there was plenty of work on the farm, and we loved that too, but we never were denied the opportunity to go to an FFA meeting or a contest or a 4-H meeting or whatever it might be. So I'm grateful to a wonderful set of parents. I, too, like many, had great advisors that encouraged, coaxed, you know, let me find my own way. So I was a chapter officer. I found public speaking. My SAE was first an acre or two of sweet corn, and then it moved to a very large seed corn detasseling operation that my twin brother and I managed. We had about 300 kids each summer. I did it for about 10 years. My brother did it for a full 25. And very, very good business at that time. And then on to state office, and I went back to Purdue University where, you know, I was still very active on campus, and I maintained this love affair with FFA when I had all the industry affairs and community affairs for Dow AgroSciences and then later Elanco. And Indianapolis being the epicenter for FFA with the center here and the convention here, I got to keep up on that love affair. It was fun.
So speaking of industry, there's got to be a lot of FFA alumni at USDA. Can you talk more about the importance of a lot of employees having that FFA background?
Oh, you can't walk any hallway or turn any corner without running into someone who is in FFA. Now, you don't know that because they don't wear their jackets like we did in yesteryear. But you come to know these people. I'll just take Secretary Perdue and the cabinet, most of us. We've had a couple of new ones that I don't know if they were in FFA, but most of us were very active in FFA, state officers, for example. And then in what we lovingly call the Big South Building, where the majority of the USDA people are in Washington, oh my gosh, through meetings, through get-to-know-yous, through social events, through the – we have some FFA events in the offices. You kind of find out who wore the blue and the gold jacket back in the day, and it's just – it's a wonderful bond that you get to celebrate. So there's plenty of them there, and I love it.
FFA's theme or mission, you might call it, is growing the next generation of leaders who will change the world. How is USDA helping in that goal for FFA?
Well, in many ways. Certainly, USDA provides funding for FFA, and many of us provide our voluntary time willingly and happily. So there's that kind of an investment. But I hope what we're doing through the work of USDA, whether it's me in trade policy or my friends in rural development pushing broadband out, we have $600 million, which is clearly not enough. But we can make a dent in some communities by extending broadband. I think of my undersecretary friend Greg Ibaugh, who leads Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. My gosh, he and his team are protecting the nation from African swine fever coming in. You talk about doing that. Secretary Perdue with his many makeovers of USDA. So I hope we're resetting the foundation that lets people like you and so many of these FFA members at this convention come in and have a solid foundation to take those next steps. And there are next steps. You know, we have 7.3 billion on the planet now, and we're going to have 9 or 10 by 2050. And we're falling behind in food productivity. We are falling behind. So that's not my quest. That's the responsibility of these young men and women out here today. So I hope we're laying a foundation, all the while showing the love like we were shown the same courtesy when we were FFA members.
Ted McKinney joining me, Hannah Bork for FFA Today.